Hey guys, today I'm talking to Cheyenne Javadi. I actually reached out to Cheyenne just cold direct message on Instagram because I liked her music. And we had a really awesome conversation, super insightful. We talked about what the songs we write mean to us, where we find our muse, our inspiration to write songs. Cheyenne and I are both software engineers outside of music, so we get into that a little bit. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away because I thought we jived really well having met for the first time. And, I think this is one of my favorite episodes that we've done. So, if you're, I think no matter who you are, if you're composing, if you're writing, if you're practicing, if you're looking for motivation, if you're looking for, just some perspective on what it's like to write and do this, do this music thing seriously, definitely check this podcast out. I see you're playing is it the Lerata?
Yeah, I got the 7-string Lerata. That thing's been my baby. Since I got it, I know you see a bunch of guitars back here.
Yeah, so that, and the Charvel, right?
And like the Daily Driver. These things have been all kind of sitting in the back. It's a cool guitar.
Did you get hooked up with them, or is that something you went out and bought because you liked it? Or?
Yeah, no, I didn't get hooked up with them. I went ahead and kept refreshing my page to get the pink roasted maple neck. Dished out too much money for it, but I think it's worth it.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah. I'm pretty friendly with Ivan Chopik, who is like co-head of that along with Tosin. And
yeah,
I was like, man, come on, hook it up. Send me something. And I still haven't got something. I'm still waiting for my big break too.
Yeah, they've been really nice though. They've been sharing a lot of my stuff on their page, which is super helpful. Like every time they share my stuff, I get a big boost of people that have never heard of me, and I appreciate that, you know.
That's part of the I'm looking for a company to do this. I'll buy a guitar, you know, mm-hmm. like full price, but I've got a Kiesel, a Mayoness are my main guitars, my Kiesel and my Mayoness. You may have seen them if like you've seen some of the new stuff I've been putting out.
Yeah.
And but I can't get those guys to reshare anything. I'm like, hello. I like show some love a little bit. So I've been poking around seeing, I think those companies are a little bit too big for me. Like they see, they probably get overwhelmed with, guitar players trying to get on their page or something.
Bossy is doing it right. They're like investing in like the up and coming guitar players I've noticed. I've noticed Kiesel and like the bigger brands, they like go for, you know, the 100,000 followers, the established artists, which is, I mean, I guess it works for them, but I really like how Bossy like has been endorsing like, you know, people that are really good, but they're not necessarily like established artists with a couple of albums out touring and all that stuff. I think it's going to work out in the long run because, you know, the skill plus the company support is going to be pushing people forward, which is super cool to see.
Yeah, I would love to play one. They just came out with a like a double cutaway one. I think it's called the Emu.
Sick. They posted an 8-string one, and I was like, looking at my wallet, just like expanding. They're great guitars. I just love how like 10 years ago, if you were buying like a 7-string or an 8-string, your options were like a black guitar or a white guitar. And they're probably Ibanez, they're probably a Kiesel. And I just love that now it's like, there's so much variety with the extended range. I love pink. I mean, you can see like half of my guitars are pink.
Yeah, I mean, I've been eyeballing a pink
Kiesel, yeah. A couple different, two pink Kiesels in particular on Reverb. I'm not going to tell you what they are because I don't want you to go and buy them because I'm still thinking about doing it.
I'm going to cut you. And I have yeah. a monopoly on pink guitars. Stay off my turf, sir.
I do that with amps too. There's an amp on Reverb right now, a Friedman BE50. And I have a Friedman Runt right now, but I really want this Friedman, and it's for local pickup only. And I have a friend in the neighborhood that if he knew that was there, he'd drive over to that person's house and knock on the door ask for it. So I'm like doing everything I can to be like, don't look, you know.
Yeah. Sending him like emails to like other things like, hey, this other cool amp.
Yeah.
Really awesome.
Yeah. Aren't these PRS? Yeah. These PRS amps are great. You should look into,
try to like bankrupt.
You should look into PRS.
Like, make him sign up for like a phishing scam and funnel all his money.
Yeah. Cool. So, so I was stalking you a bit on, Instagram and following your stuff because we've worked with some similar people. Some of the same people, Jacob Umansky did he did all the bass for the new Ever Fourth Art album.
There's a new one coming out. So actually, funny story. I told my friend about this podcast, and he was like, "Dude, Nick is such an OG. Check out this Ever Fourth Art stuff. Man, that is cool. That album from 2014. Wow. First of all, I don't know how that went under my radar, but that is."
So, that's the story of my life. I was just saying we did a podcast yesterday with this guitar player from the band Wolf and Bear, and I was like, look, I'm gonna just call my next album Under the Radar because everything I do is just I don't get it. But thank you,
it's good stuff. So you have a new one coming out, it's with Jacob. That's gonna be cool.
Yeah, Jacob is on bass, and Chris Barreto sang on the first album, but nice. he was unable to do the second one. So we have this guy, Mike Semeski, who did the one intervals album that has vocals. Mike Semeski.
That's him. What that one is called.
Is that one Voice Within or
yeah, Within? Voice Within. That's what it is.
That's the one. Yeah. And Harp Machine was like a band from like a decade ago. I think they've done some stuff since then, but he was the vocalist on that. And I'm sure a bunch of other things, but I'm pretty sure those are the two big ones, Harp Machine and
I get a lot of intervals. So I've listened to Harp Machine maybe like twice in my life. I'm sure they're a great band, but I get a lot of comments on my stuff. That's like, man, this sounds like the Harp Machine. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I don't
understand. Well, why do you think that is? Did you listen to Harp Machine and like find anything? I don't personally think it sounds like Harp Machine.
I think it's like the Middle Eastern influence. I think people pick up on the like spicy harmonic minor stuff. I think Harp Machine really likes to show that part of them too, which is cool. I think that's probably why. I don't know, I can't think of anything because I was listening to it, I was like trying to find where the similarity is, but I'll take it as a compliment. I'm not upset.
It's also like fast. Your music is pretty fast, and Harp Machine music is like it falls in that like tech category, right?
Yeah,
sort of like it's hard. Yeah, a lot of notes. But yours is it's different. It's different. Like Harp Machine, it strikes me as more of like a metal, like metal band, and you strike me as more like a more of a progressive type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Semantics, I guess.
yeah, who cares, right?
Right, yeah.
So you reached out to me, as you called it, housekeeping, on Instagram. Is that something you wanted to talk about?
Sure. I mean, I feel like it's inevitable, right? Because I've been,
I did see one thing on the internet about it. I mean, I'll let you like get into it. Yeah. But I did see one thing about it that it was already sort of something that you had mentioned somewhere.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. I could try to find it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I feel like I've been very like under the radar about it because I have all this content coming out that's with me with a full beard, and you know, I just wanted to get all that stuff out before I show my new self to Instagram and my quote unquote audience. Also I feel like it's like, you know, stressful to just be like, hey, this is the new me, especially with how like every single day there's some new stuff about trans people in the news. I mean, to me now it's just like, I don't even think about it anymore. Like I started last year, June, I think, is whenever I started transitioning. It was really hard at first, but I feel like I'm past the awkward stage of like, you know, new look, new voice, like perception changes and all that. All my friends know, all my family knows, very supportive, like don't even think about it anymore. Yeah, it's super cool. Like,
that's great.
Finally living as myself. I don't have to like be, you know, detached from my body 24/7. But I feel like Instagram is the last like tough nut to crack. And I'm glad this podcast came along because, you know, I wasn't planning on doing anything like, oh, this is my big coming out post with the long explanation. Like, that's none of your business, man. I just new avatar. You go with it.
Yeah.
Like new bag of flesh. Don't worry about it. Just listen to my music.
Yeah. Well, when you reached out to me and told me that, I didn't know the first thing about you.
Yeah.
Like, so I wasn't sure if you were like, someone could very well send me a message like that, especially in this kind of genre of music where I find a lot of, I don't know what the word is. I think there's a lot of immaturity in this thing, which is a shame because I really like this kind of music, but I do find a lot of immaturity here. So, not knowing the first thing about you, I didn't know, like, are you messing with me? But, nonetheless, I was like, okay, well, you know, I really like your music and that's what counts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I don't want this to be a focus. Like, I feel like, gender is like the last thing that I want to talk about. I mean, not just this podcast, but like in general, because it's like to me, it's such a simple thing. It's like, you know, trying to worry about, oh, it's my friend plays the drums and I play the bass. I'm not cool with that. Right. And like, let's have a discussion about it. That's just what it is, you know? I feel like that's where we're going in society too, which is cool. But yeah, one of the reasons why it's taken me so long to like just be me on Instagram is the immaturity. Most people that I know in this space someone's talking outside.
I can barely hear it.
Most people that I like interact with in this space have been really cool, but I know there are people that like are going to send you weird stuff and stuff to deal with.
I just feel like the overwhelming response though is going to be mostly similar to what I'm like. Everyone, I'm pretty sure the vast, vast majority are going to be overwhelmingly supportive kind of get past it really, really quickly and be like, okay, well, when's your next song coming out?
And mostly
get on your case about like, oh, come on, new music, let's go. I mean, that's all I get about, I can't, especially with Everforth, right? There's not a day that goes by where someone isn't like, well, you know, yeah, that last song you put out was cool, but when are you going to put out more on Forth? Right? It's like
working on it. Yeah. How was working with Umansky? My experience with them was mind blowing, to be honest with you, you might have had the same experience where you send him a song and this man just 24 hours later comes back with like sickest bass you've ever heard. And like, I asked
that's pretty much
one revision for my 7 songs that he worked on. Just one.
Yeah. That's pretty close to my experience as well. It was a little bit like, are you programming? Are you like, do you somehow have the MIDI for these songs already? And you're just putting it into your plugin and not actually learning it. But the fact that I would send him stuff and he would learn it and practice it and nail it and send me like really, really good bass stuff in such a short amount of time was nuts. I thought I would have him do bass on 1 or 2 or 3 songs for this album, but he was turning things around so quick that he did bass for the entire Ever Forthright album, which is like 70 minutes of music in like 2 weeks. And it was just unbelievable.
It's crazy. Yeah. Same here. It's like, I only wanted real bass on 2 songs. And then I was like, all right, 3 songs. And I was like, wow, what? 4 songs. All right. You want to do the whole album? Like, just let's go. Jeez.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I know. It makes me wish that I played like bass, because I feel like I could be a bass version of that if but I'm just not a bass player. There's just such a surplus of guitar players, and not enough bass players like Jacob.
I agree. Yeah. Like, who else do you hit up? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of great bass players out there. I just haven't like seen any in the public space. Actually, you know what? I can think of someone else. Actually, Jacob did a song with them recently too. It's that band with 2 basses, Omnific, I think that's what they're called. Have you checked them out?
I don't know who that is. Let me see. I got my computer right in front of me.
It's 2 Omnific? Basses, no guitar, and then drums, which is such a cool concept.
Gosh, he's got a monopoly on this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, good for him.
Have you messed with this plugin?
No, not yet.
Like, dude, it sounds just like him. Like, if you spend the time to program it, it sounds just like him.
That's awesome. I've been using Eurobass for years, but when I saw that he had his own thing coming out, I was like, all right, I guess I'm convinced. I'll switch over, but. I finished writing my music that I just put out last May.
Mm-hmm.
The music was done, and then I did some music videos for it in August of last year, and then that took time. And I don't think I had everything done and sitting on my computer ready to figure out how to release it until like the first week of January.
Stuff takes time.
So it takes so long.
When you finish it in one day and sit down and program drums, program this, get it sent to my producer. But like, it's like one of those like Russian dolls in reverse. You just keep bringing a new one out and it's bigger than the last one. I feel you on that. Yeah.
When you told me that you had prepared your content 2 years ago and were just kind of putting it out now, my gut reaction was like, geez, that's like what? And then I took a second and realized, oh, wait a minute. I've been almost doing like the exact same thing. Like my content has been, I've had these songs for pretty much almost a year.
Right.
And I'm just putting it out now. Yeah. This stuff takes forever. And then, you know, you have your content, you have your new music, you got your music video. And Spotify still wants you to upload it like at least 6 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
So then you're left sitting there like twiddling your thumbs for 6 weeks.
Yeah. I think that's the way to go. Cause I feel like, if you try to like rush creative stuff, it, I guess, doesn't become the best version of it possible. I kind of fell into this on accident because like I wrote these songs like 3-4 years ago, I want to say, and just kept iterating on them, just kept, you know, rewriting them, re-recording them. Not always on purpose. Yep. Like, the first song that I put out, I re-recorded that thing, I want to say like 10 times. And the first 5 were because like, I didn't know how to record my guitar into my computer. And like, I was recording crappy signal, noise. And then like halfway through, I got my Lurata and I was like, well, now I want to track with this thing. So I redid it again. But every time I kind of just deleted everything and came out with some new version of the song, I was like, wow, this sounds better. And like, I had some new ideas for it. And yeah, I think it's painful to like, I sit on this song for like 3-4 years, but then the end version becomes really cool.
This music I just finished, I went into it with like a budget and a timeline mentality. I was like, okay, so even in booking the studio time, I said, I booked the studio time before I had even all the songs written. So that was like, okay, your deadline is May. So you have 4-5 months to write 4 tunes. Mm-hmm. Which isn't something I've done before. It's always just been like an open book, you know, take however long as you want. But I really wanted to, I hadn't written music for really years. And I felt like the only way to really do it and to get it over with was to book stuff and like force myself into a corner and make it happen. And then that's kind of the way I did the rest of the music videos as well. And everything was like, okay, set a deadline, commit to it, and make sure you, you know, and finish it. So there was a bit of a balance between like, you don't want to, it doesn't sound good to say that you budgeted and timelined your own projects. Like people will say all the time, oh, I have quality over anything else, and take your time. And it's the most important thing is that it comes out a certain way. But at a certain point, you just gotta pull the trigger. Like you were saying, re-recording something a bunch of times, and each time it sounds better. At a certain point, you gotta be like, dude, stop fucking doing this. Just finish the song.
I think you need that point of just like saying, hey, like that's enough. Like let's commit to something. I definitely agree with that. I think it's a balancing act. I stalked you a little bit online. I noticed you're also a software person, which...
Oh, you found my LinkedIn.
I found your LinkedIn. Yeah, that's the first thing that comes up. Really. I know. Me too. I'm in software too. And it's really interesting because with software, it's like, just get it out and then iterate on it, right? Like get out something like an MVP, and it doesn't have to be perfect because we can just make updates to it. But I've always found this like difference between the two worlds, because like you can't just put out an album that's like bare bones
and fix it,
and then like, you know, push your new changes to it, and now it has drums, guys. Go check it out.
It's like, this is the worst way to release an album I've ever heard. Here's the click.
Yes, so this song is going to be in 1716, and this is a guitar profile.
Yeah.
Right?
So here's the unmixed version, here's the mixed version, here's the master version.
It's like, and, you know, no one wants to hear that, so it's very challenging to like be so used to software and that release cycle of just get shitty things out and fix it. Can we cuss, by the way? Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. And then iterate over it. I really wish you could just like start with a demo, push that demo out to Spotify, and then add stuff to it. I know it's just not realistic, but yeah, I think the balancing act is like, well, how do you treat music? Because, you know, most people, I guess, aren't in music for money, I suppose. They're trying to get this creative thing out.
Still, I'm still figuring that out. Like, I've been playing guitar for 20 years. I'm still figuring out how to make
money. It's really unfair because musicians, especially in this genre, they put like, you know, weeks of just practice, and like you need to have years of just foundation. It's unfair that there's no money in it, but my point is like most people are in this because they want to express some creative thing. And to your point, you mentioned like, you know, you need like a terminal thing, like a deadline thing. And something I've struggled with is like, well, if it's a creative thing that's not up to my vision yet, do I really need a deadline? But then you run into this issue of like, man, I have so many songs and they're all just in this cycle of life and death. And I just got to pull it plug at some point. Yeah.
And I think mixing engineers go through the same thing too. I remember talking to John Brown from Monuments about this one time, and because he does a lot of mixing, and he was just kind of saying something very similar. Like, you could mix something until you're dead.
Yeah.
But it's at a certain point, you have to like wake up in the morning, hit the space bar with like fresh ears and be like, you know what? I think that's it.
Yep.
You know, and just like kind of wrap it up. I guess it's more like building a bridge than it is writing software. You know, you can't roll out a shitty bridge.
Yeah, that's you know? A great analogy, actually. Yeah, you can't just like get to the other side with the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, you can't just be like, okay, here's this real risky bridge. We promise we'll fix it.
you actually can't turn back or go forward, but
it's real wobbly.
Yeah. That's. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I feel like it's an unsolvable problem. You just have to compromise. Especially if you're, are you a perfectionist, Nick? Would you?
Perfectionist? Yeah. I don't think so. No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. No, I don't think so. If I was a perfectionist, I don't think I'd be like playing jazz. You know, I think a big part of jazz is improvisation, and the way something comes out is the way it comes out.
That's true.
I think if I were a perfectionist, I don't think I'd be able to tolerate, you know, improvisation and living with like imperfections like that. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's like jazz has that. I saw a meme somewhere that's like, you don't like jazz because you don't like it. You don't like it because of the freedom that it gives you or something like that. And I was like, wow. Too real, man. Too real. I think I'm definitely a perfectionist. That's why I actually struggle with improvising sometimes, because it's like that line that I just played wasn't perfect. Like, I could have done this and this and this and this and that. So this album has really taught me to just like be fine with it. Like, you know, I've spent 100% of my energy on this thing. I've tried my best. Like, it's fine. But it's not perfect. Like, what even is perfect? Like, you're never going to get there, right? It's like trying to count to infinity. You're never going to reach that point. You're just going to get closer.
Yeah. And also, as an artist, you sometimes got to keep yourself in check. Like, what I've heard of these songs, they sound perfect to me. They sound like you've spent like the right amount of time writing, this right amount of time recording, you've made the right decisions in terms of like production. Omar and I were driving back from doing the music videos together. We drove up to Canada to meet with the guy who shot my music videos, and I was driving back and I was like, you know, I put so much work into this. And I've listened to these songs a zillion times to make sure that every second, and there's even things that I go back to and listen on these recordings and I'm like, right there, that's the thing I don't like, the way that cymbal does a thing. And I was like, you know, my biggest fan is going to listen to this song 3 times.
That's true. Yeah. And they're not going to hear that cymbal. Oh, that's.
And they're not going to hear that.
Yeah.
No.
They're not going to care.
So
there's out of tune, dude. Just go on. Yeah. No, that's such a great point. Like, yeah. When we were producing this stuff, the guy who was producing it, his name is Clemon. Love that guy. If you've never heard of him, look him up on Spotify. Clemon Belio, I want to say. It's CLE, excuse me, MENT, and then Belio, however you want to spell that. Great guy. He's super talented, plays like 1,000 instruments. When we were like working on these songs, I would say like, hey, can we do this very specific detail thing, this minute thing here? And he'd be like, we can, but like, no one's going to hear it. Like it's for you. Like exactly the thing you said, your biggest fan will listen to those once, twice, 3 times, right? And never pick up on that detail. But I guess then at that point, I feel like the question that comes to my mind is like, are you making music for other people or are you doing it for yourself?
That's a big question.
Yeah. And I think I've noticed I'm 90% doing it for myself, but then I think about it a little bit more and it's like, well, why do I want that for myself? And it's so I can express myself to other people, but then it becomes about other people at the end.
Yeah. So we were talking again, we had a podcast yesterday with someone and I was like, yeah, I've never worked in the service industry. Like I've never been a waiter. And I've always kind of done music pretty selfishly. It's always been about like, how good can I get? And I think it, like going back to high school, it was all about, it was very selfish. It was all about how cool can I look playing the guitar in front of these people. And then a different kind of meaning came along when I started really getting into jazz. It was understanding a language. But I guess like even then getting on stage and playing jazz performances, it was mostly for myself, I think. Like how, or like it's common in jazz to have like, they call it like cutting, like, you know, to play the best solo, or someone solos first and then you solo second and you want to cut that guy. You want to play a better solo than that person. So now I'm thinking, all right, well, we gotta transcend this somehow. I've been playing music a long time. This can't only be about me all the time. And I see a lot of the stuff online about people, what looks like people writing music for themselves, and it's not really what I'm interested in anymore.
You're more into like the energy between the people type music.
Well, I think for the first time, I'm thinking, well, maybe I am in the service industry now. All of a sudden, like if I'm no longer playing guitar for myself and I'm writing music because I want to make someone happy or, you know, be like a merchant of emotion.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just a way of thinking of this that I've never thought about before.
Well, I kind of want to throw a wrench on your thinking now, because I've had a couple of months after this album to reflect on stuff like this. And so you mentioned how you want to be kind of like a merchant of emotions. I feel like then at the end of the day, then that's still for you, right? And I'm not saying this in a bad way, like saying like you're a mega narcissist and you want to do things for yourself. But like, I feel like at the end of the day, even your desire to like make other people happy, it still comes back to you, right? Because it makes you happy. I'm assuming you're not like making people happy and then like crying about it. And you're like, man, that sucked. Let's do it again.
Like a martyr?
Yeah, like a martyr. You're like, oh, I hate this, but I have to do it.
Yeah.
It's a big question, I feel like.
And it's got me listening to a lot of different kind of music now. I'm listening to I'm finding myself listening to a lot of like Americana, mm-hmm. like Telecaster type stuff. Like, you ever hear this guitar player Blake Mills?
No.
Blake, he's kind of very rooted in like Americana, and he sings, and I've been listening to some more of that and like the blues and what else have I been listening to? And like some pop stuff. Like I've never really listened to Imagine Dragons, and now I'm listening to a lot of Imagine Dragons.
Did you listen to that new Sleep Token song that had like an Imagine Dragons section at the end? I mean, I guess Imagine Dragons like section at the end.
I think the last time I put them on,
it's the first single that he put out, or I guess they put out.
I've heard them be referred to as like the Metal Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I think mixing stuff like that is cool. But you also brought up something else that I want to talk about. You mentioned like this idea of like transcending like this, you know, meaning that you, I guess, give to music. And I've been like thinking about that a lot recently, where it's like, why do I do the things that I do? Like, why do I want to play guitar? Why do I want to, you know, have a nice apartment or like have friends or like this and this and that, right? And like, I kind of just like went on this loop of like, well, I want to play music because, you know, it makes me happy. Like just a roundabout of like, why? And I feel like at a certain point, I just came to the realization of like, maybe this isn't the right path to go down. Like, I feel like where I am now, it's like, you know, I play music because I do it, you know, I do this thing and makes me happy. I don't have to like intellectualize it.
You mean intellectualizing it is the path not to go down?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, just if you're a guitar player and you like it and you're good at it and it works out for you, like you just end it there. I feel like at a certain point, this problem of like wanting to have a meaning to something becomes artificial almost, I've noticed, at least in myself. And what I mean by that is like, you don't necessarily have to have that meaning to play guitar. Like, you can just do it.
Yeah. Like the answer to this question could be so much more nuanced than you can even ever begin to, you know, figure out. Like, you don't need one or two. There may not be one or two answers to this. It could be ever evolving and ever changing based on how I feel that day. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so that's a good, I like that way of thinking about it, is to almost, well, just don't think about it. You enjoy doing it.
Here I am, like, doing this thing that I'm doing. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it seems like you had a lot of, it seems like at least at the time when you were writing this music and making these videos, you were focused on some sort of, you were focused on a message at least, or you were feeling a certain way when you were writing the music, because there's recurring themes of the persimmon, the evil eye, what you want to tell me a bit about that, like how you kind of got those?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like this last album was, or I guess my first one. I say last, like I have a big catalog. But
my latest,
I'm an artist of 40 years of experience. I noticed as I was writing these songs that, you know, I was tapping into emotions that I didn't have another way of getting to. And what I mean by that is like, there is no other vehicle for me to get to them besides music. Like, for example, the Evil Eye thing. So that song, Persimmon Tree, is like, you know, a representation of me coming to terms with my like Persian background and like being an immigrant in America and accepting that you're different. Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really go into this album like wanting to write a song about that or like write a song about this specific pain that I have that I processed with the song, but it kind of just like fell into my lap. Like, for example, that song, again, Persimmon Tree, I was writing it and I noticed some of the melodies that I'm writing are very familiar. And I was like, man, I have heard this before. Like, this is not original. Like, I'm like copying this from somewhere and I'm not realizing it. And I showed it to my parents. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is a Persian song. Like, it's like an old Persian song that's very popular. And, you know, a couple of stuff like that happened with that song. And I was like, in this weird headspace still. I think I was like 24, 5-ish, where like trying to block out the part of me that's Iranian, that's, you know, different. So for context, I came to America in high school, right? And you can imagine that shock of just like coming into a different culture. And I went through the classic, like, oh, I don't want to be an immigrant. I want to be white. I want to be like everybody else, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. So I internalized mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff. And like that song really helped me because I was like, my cultural identity is something that I can just tap into and something that I can appreciate. Like it's, you know, not only something I should be happy about, but like it's useful. It's like whenever I want to make a song special and unique, I just reach into that bag of
reaching,
right? Like no one, yeah. no one that listens to this song is going to know what that thing that I'm referencing is. So it's very new and it's very fresh. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where the Evil Eye stuff came from. And Ben Levin, who did three of my videos, which loveliest person on this planet, deserves the whole world. never seen his stuff. You should go watch it. He did some music video for Car Bomb, which is how I decided to work with them.
Oh, let me see.
He did that one that just like blew everyone's mind. Forgot what the song is called. I think it's called Scattered Sprites or something. But yeah, he's a very great guy. I wrote him like
Dissect Yourself,
yeah,
maybe?
That one. With the lasers.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this is like...
But I hit him up and I like wrote him like a 2 pages of like the most vulnerable stuff that you can tell like a stranger about just my background and like how the song came about and how I used to hate myself and that part of myself and now I've embraced it. Mm-hmm. And that music video is about exactly that. It's like, you know, this evil eye that's kind of saying no to things that are beneficial to it. And then at the end, it comes to terms with it. But point is, every song that I wrote almost, it tapped into this specific part of me that I just processed with the song. Which is cool. I think music is such a great vehicle for that. You know?
So have you found a way to give people like that sort of background as they're watching the video?
Kind of. Or... Yeah. I think my preference is like 10, 15 layers of abstraction almost. You know, like mm-hmm. I want the videos to be really cool just without any context. And I want you to be able to kind of derive your own meaning, I guess. And if you really pay attention, I guess you can see my story in it. But I'm not a fan of like, you know, super on the nose, like descriptive stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because it's personal, right? Like I feel like these pains are hidden away from me in my own brain, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's natural for me to just abstract them away from other people too, right? I think it's cool.
There's also so much beauty in ambiguity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. It's like when you look at art that everybody looks at and every single person has a different meaning from it, I think that's super cool, right?
Yeah, and that doesn't actually exist a whole lot in this genre either. Everything, there's a lot of stuff in this genre that's very much I guess kind of like what we were saying before, like a little bit selfish, look at me, look how good I've gotten. Yeah. And it is nice to actually see something something that does have some meaning and ambiguity behind the scenes. I mean, full disclosure, the music I've been putting out recently, I had 4 singles and they're now officially all released as of Friday. Those were just, I don't want to say just, but there's really is no meaning behind them. They are songs and sounds that I liked. And, the videos are most, it's almost like fancy playthroughs, like demonstrations of me playing the guitars, but like in a fun way to watch. So I'm trying to find like, well, what is that next thing that I'm going to write about? What is my, like, there's got to be another layer here that I haven't tapped into yet. That's beyond just be really good at the guitar.
Yeah.
And I do like how when I found your music, I thought, no, this is nice. This is like good music. And there's actually some, there's like some like volume to this. But, yeah. So
thank you. I'll take that compliment. and I will say I did still fall into the trap of like, look how good I am. Cause I feel like a couple of my songs are exactly that. It's like, I can fly in the fretboard. Check this out.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you go back to it and you're like, well, what does this mean to me? What is this? You kind of attach meaning to it, I guess.
Depending on your mood, right? You can also wake up one day and be like, you know, screw it. I'm just going to
shred on the guitar.
I'm just going to show people how good I am again.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think there's merit to that, though? It's like, that's still, you're still expressing something, right? Like, I'm sure you're not a virtuoso at the guitar just to be that. I'm sure there's a reason behind it. And I think a song that still has meaning to it, still has depth to it, right?
Yeah. So why do you think you got so good at guitar? I mean,
well, I don't,
I'll tell you why I got, why I tell you, I'll tell you why I practiced the hell out of the guitar. And it was because, I weighed about 105 pounds in high school. I never qualified for any sports team. I didn't particularly care about like class or getting good grades. My friend bought a guitar and I picked it up one day and I started playing some Metallica stuff and almost immediately got some like gratification.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, you just picked that up and you can already do that? Mm-hmm. And that was it, locked in.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, I've never been good at anything. I've never gotten any girls. I've never really had a ton of friends. But shit, if this is what it takes, like if this is like the key, this is the ticket, I'm gonna get as good as hell at this thing. Yeah. And that was like the slippery slope. It's not a slippery slope. It's what's wonderful to find something that you're good at. Like,
it's like a nice roller coaster. It's a lot of turns.
But you know, now I've been playing the guitar for 20 years and I'm married. I have two kids and I said this in another podcast, that it may not be out yet, but I do like it. And it's, now that I have like children and a family, I'm realizing that none of this will ever mean more to me than those kids do.
Yeah.
Like that's where my heart is now. Like the love of my life are my children.
That's sweet. I love that.
And so when I pick up the guitar now, that the like angst that I felt for so many years, I mean, for many, many years, it's still there a little bit because it's so, you know, you have a screensaver up on your monitor for 15 years. When you turn off your computer, you're probably going to have some remnants screen.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, I've had the screensaver up for so many years and it's burned in there as
have you got your kids into music yet or do they like your stuff? Have they listened to it?
No. Well, the oldest one is 2.5 and the little one is only like 4 months. So, no, not really. I don't put them on online, but I did have like, an audio of my son. I was asking my son, like, hey, what do you like better, jazz or Old MacDonald? And he was like, Old MacDonald. So
you do, same.
Yeah, or if I put jazz on and if I put jazz on in the car, he's like, no, Daddy, Big Bird.
I'm
like, all right. So he doesn't get it yet. He does like to do like death metal impressions. He does like to like go, and he knows what he's doing, which is kind of cute.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, so now it's about finding, again, we kind of keep on coming back to this theme, but finding,
meaning,
a meaning to it. And this is my own personal journey. If someone's journey is that they're in a phase where they're feeling that fire and that angst, that's a good thing to feel. That really, that'll drive you to practice. Oh, yeah. And like go.
Yeah. Yeah. My situation was almost exactly the same as yours, like down to the weight. Like I was skin and bones in high school. And like the only other exposure to music I've had, like playing anything, was piano as a kid. And I did not practice. Like my mom would take me to my piano like classes and the teacher would be like, hey, like Cheyenne is not practicing, not doing anything. Like, why are you doing this? Just practice or don't come here. but like, I always found it interesting. I didn't know the route in my brain to go down to have me practice. Right. I never got that like initial bug that you get, I guess. You know, picking up Metallica and you're like, wow, this is so instantly gratifying. Let me chase this forever now. I never got that because I was like, you know, practicing like Beethoven's like for kids. It's just for practicing. So I always had this like chip on my shoulder that like, man, I like that stuff. Why was I like not good at it? So almost like on a whim, I probably had like $70 in my account. I was 19 at the time, I think. I was about to start college. And I bought this like acoustic slash amp combo off of Amazon for like $50. And man, that guitar was so hard to play. But I mean, I got obsessed with it. Like I was playing for 2 months. I was really into like folk stuff, you know, because I had an acoustic, right? And then I got my stepdad's like the same one that everyone gets, the Squire Junior like black with a Fender amp combo. And I was playing black metal on that thing for like hours and hours and hours and hours. And the moment that it kind of went from like, this is something that I like doing to like, this is all I'm doing. Like all I'm doing is playing music, is trying to get good. I found Chon and I was just like, dumbfounded. I was like, how do you like, this sounds so cool and musical, but they're insanely good. How do you even get here? So I made it like my life's mission to be as good as I could at that. And like 5-6 months in, I was transcribing like Chon songs by ear, just like sitting in front of my computer. And like, I mean, it sounded really bad. They're still on my YouTube if you want to scroll through it. But like I spent like 6-7 month chunks of time on one song. Just sit there and then play it until I can play it the whole way through. And yeah, that really shot me from like a beginner to like an intermediate very, very fast.
So these are 6 years old. Yeah. Have you been playing guitar for about 6-7 years?
Yep, 6-7 years, yeah.
Wow.
Very obsessively, very, very obsessively for the first 5 years, probably.
Yeah.
Then I got into intervals. That's sick. I got into intervals and I forgot the song name. I think it was Sweet Tooth. I straight up played Sweet Tooth for 9 months. Like all I did was wake up, skip class, transcribe that song on freaking unpaid version of Reaper that's like screaming at me, like, please buy me. You've been trialing me for 2,000 hours. and like best thing I could have done, because it's like transcribing is, I would say, all you need to be able to find your own voice. Something to your brain that floods you with ideas. Like you transcribe something and the next day you're like, I have this new idea. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of where my journey began. And then I was like, I want to write songs that give me this feeling of like, wow, how did this happen? Like, this is so unique. This is such a, I guess, Venn diagram of like human achievements. Plus it sounds really cool and has a lot of emotions. So I started just writing, really crappy stuff. And the first full song that I wrote is the one that I just put out last month, I think.
So you have three songs out, right?
Yeah, I have three songs out. Yeah, new ones coming.
Is that it? Okay, so you have a whole EP. You have a how many songs do you have on deck?
Eight, and there's going to be two more singles, and then I'm just dropping at the album. But you can tell that song is my first song because it's just like riff, 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 riff. Nothing repeats. Nothing makes sense.
Sounds like Everforthright songs. Nothing ever repeated in an Everforthright song.
Yeah, you did it really well. I will just
thank you.
Just tell you that those thank songs you. They don't repeat. But yeah, I was like jamming in the car, just like my mind was blown. but yeah, I feel like I relate to the angst thing that you were talking about. It's like I suddenly went from not being good at anything to this like magical instrument that I can express myself through, like using. And it's
yeah, that's powerful, awesome. You know? I mean, I feel at some. So we've said that. Yeah, music could just be whatever you need it to be, whatever you want it to be. There's no right answers.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have like that fire, there's no way I could have been the same guitar player. And without a little bit of fire now, there's no way I can maintain being this kind of guitar player. Like I need to have some sort of there needs to be some sort of deep-rooted insecurity that I never solve, that I never figure out. Like, I can't go to too much therapy because then I'll be way too complacent and happy. Like, there needs to be some sadness in my being at all times, or else, you know, or else I'm going to stop practicing. There needs to be something that I always need to prove, or else there's no reason for me to do this. Like, would I practice as much as I practice, only because I like how it sounds, or only because I'm having fun doing it all the time?
Like if you were the only person on the planet, would you still write?
And I'm just like, oh, I'm the only one here. Like, we're just going to practice all. I don't think so. Like
probably find bananas or something. You're like,
yeah, I gotta make a shelter. Jeez.
No, I get what you mean. It's like, in a way, the pain is a good thing. And it's like when you get too comfortable, it's like, well, I'll just stay being comfortable. Like, why sit there and like torture myself, right? I don't have this angst. I don't have this insecurity. But I mean, I feel like we're lucky as humans that I feel like we all always have a source of angst. And for me, that angst is like being alive. I feel like after this album, I had this moment where I was like, okay, I've spent 4 years with every day of my life. The meaning of it is to finish this album, right? And now I'm at a point where I don't have that anymore. So like, what gives? Like, what do I do now? Like, yeah. where's the meaning in my life? And currently where I'm at is, you know, the meaning that the angst that comes that I get from it comes from like, I just want to stick it to life. Like, life is what you make of it. Life is, I guess, inherently pointless. Mm-hmm. And I just want to stick it to the life because, you know, I choose to have meaning for this. And I think that's the, like the angstiest thing you can do. It's like, you realize this thing has no rules. It doesn't really care if you're making product. It doesn't really care if you're sick or healthy, right? So you're like, screw you. I'm going to double down on everything that I do because that's...
Watch me make meaning out of this.
Watch me love this shit. So I think that angst will never go away, thankfully. Like, I don't think humans can ever be like, oh, yes, we've arrived at this point of happiness. Everybody is so calm. And you can see it. It's like, as soon as you accomplish something, you're like, all right, what's next? Come on. Where's the next thing that I can dream about? And like,
Well, so honestly, like the past 10 days, I've actually barely touched my guitar. Well, for a couple of reasons. One, I'm trying to get some social media stuff together and I can't do both. Like I'm either in like a marketing mindset or I'm in a musical mindset. I can't do both at the same time. But also it's been kind of nice to just be like, shit, like those songs took a long time to write, to practice. I just played a live show for honestly, that was my first, I wasn't broadcasting this, but that was my first live show in 10 years. The last live show I played was in Euroblast with Everforthright 10 years ago. And then, so I was, you know, practicing and getting rehearsals together for that. And that's out of the way. And now my next gig is way out in July. So the past 10 days, I've just been kind of on vacation a little bit, just like, you know what, take a break, the guitar in the case, don't practice, go get some ice cream, go get ice cream at 11 a.m.
Yeah, I think Omar's got the right idea. Your vacation is, I'll just
work. It's still work.
I'll just work.
It's still,
yeah, focus on my job.
Yeah, focus. See, that's the funniest part. That's like, we have full-time jobs and we consider taking a break as not working.
Only doing my full-time job.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
I think it's a blessing though, because like, I can't imagine like being a doctor and also a pro guitar player.
The reason I got into software is because I heard that the work-life balance could be pretty good if you find the right place to work.
Yep, for sure.
I don't tell anyone I work with that I play guitar just to keep that barrier a little bit. But
Like, why are you taking off a week? And you're not going to tell them that I'm touring. I'm just skiing with the wife.
yeah, exactly. Or like, are you taking off Thursday, Friday next week? What are you doing? No, I'm just
chilling, family.
Not doing a music video.
Yeah. I feel like it's hard though, because I feel like people pick up on it, and I love sharing my music with people. I love just like talking about music, sharing the, like what I like, what I do. Because I've noticed in tech, there's a lot of musicians, because I feel like there's a lot of overlap with like software and tech. But I always have to like cut myself off, because I like that separation of like, you know, I'm an engineer, we're working, and you don't need to know about what I do in my free time or why I'm taking vacation. Because I've been in situations where people get weird about it. It's like, well, why are you taking off for guitar? Like, you have a deadline. Totally, yeah? Yeah. Come on.
Totally. Yeah. It's like it's like doing work for family. Like I don't even want to like fix my in-laws router, because then it's like, oh, Nick's the IT guy. Like, no, don't ask me to do it. I don't mix work and family. I don't mix work and guitar. Like these are all different things.
Have you ever mixed software with music, or thought about it, or gone that?
No, not really. That would be a thing that I would probably really obsess about. Like I would, you know, want to make my own plugin I haven't really wanted to dive into that. Maybe someday, but right now I'm still in like player mode. I want to be a guitar player. I want to be a composer and a songwriter. And I like that the two things are different for now.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah. I've gone down that route. I think it was 4 years ago, 3 years ago. I don't know. Time has been very stretchy recently. I made a music theory app, like / website, and very, very obsessed about it. It's called Solfege, S-O-L-F-E-J. Yeah, it was a really cool project because I got to combine, like, you know, my love for music and my love for tech. And it still makes me like passive income, which is super sweet.
Oh, nice. Is it so S-O-L-F-E-J?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, we're in tech. We don't do G's. We do J.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it? Yeah. I was going to say, is it .io? And it is .io.
Of course it is. Yeah. It has to be. Yeah.
So this is all you, this is your brainchild.
Yeah, that's what I worked on. It's like an iOS app, Android app. And I also have this like cool little like chord search thing / like scale search thing. That was really like a marketing ploy. And I feel like if any of your listeners are like here for like talking about music, this is like where they dip out. But essentially I like scraped this other API to get like 50,000 chords, like every possible, you know,
combination of chords or something.
And I did the same thing with scales. And then I was like, okay, I need like organics, like hits, right? I want to just not worry about this website. It does its own thing with SEO. So I don't know if you've ever used Gatsby. But I use Gatsby, mm-hmm. which is this like
static React.
Yeah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Nerd shit. To make like a page for each chord, each scale, right? And it's like a static page, so it gets scraped by like, you know, web crawlers. So essentially that website you're on has like 200,000 pages, and I get a ridiculous amount of like search result hits from that venture that I did. It's like 2 million impressions a month or something, just because I have every chord imaginable. So some random chords that like I would never even think about are like my website is the top result, which is very proud of that.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. So you got to find a way to then funnel your Solfege visitors to your YouTube videos or something, or to your Instagram.
I really do, but
yeah,
you know how it is. You start a project, you wrap it up, and you're like, all right, yeah. Like I was thinking about like a pop up or something that's like, hey, I do music, you know.
Let me see if this thing is still around. Dodecagon Music, me and a friend. No, it doesn't exist anymore. Me and a friend were working on something similar years ago called Dodecagon, but it's not a thing anymore. And we even like made a video to pitch to
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter like investors and stuff, and you know, it was a long ways away from anyone actually wanting to invest in this, but it was a fun kind of project.
What was that? Was it
like one app?
Music theory thing?
Yeah, music theory thing. Like one app was like, here's a pitch, and it would generate a pitch, and then you had to slide a meter. Like you would hear the pitch, and then you'd have to slide a meter up to the precise pitch, like you know, microtonal pitches and everything.
Yeah.
So you would stop it when you think you got to the right precise one, and it would tell you, okay, so you heard a 440 hertz A and you landed on 432, like pretty close. And so you'd really have to hone in on
that's useful for like producers. Yeah. That's a cool idea.
It was fun, but like, you know, again, I just want to play the guitar sometimes.
Yeah. So you kind of just like moved on from it.
Yeah, it's dead. It's gone.
Yeah. I feel like every tech/ musician has a graveyard of just probably really good ideas that just, you know, died, you know?
All this stuff takes so much work though. You gotta care. you got to care about all these things. I don't know how Elon Musk does it. I mean,
yeah,
maybe just throws a lot of money at these different things, but like, you know,
he's got Asperger's.
Yeah. I guess that helps. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the new term for that is just autism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not that I've looked up anything about that personally.
a touch of the tism.
I feel like people don't realize, this is a complete tangent, but I feel like people don't realize what like autism can look like.
It looks like everything. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's insane. And I feel like
it's so crazy how different everybody is.
Right. Yeah. 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 I feel like a lot of people that are like obsessive and in our genre might be on the spectrum somewhere, and not in a bad way. I feel like autism gets like a bad rap almost, I want to say. Like,
maybe not so much anymore.
But yeah, point is, I feel like it's a superpower, you know? Like, recently,
it can be.
Like, recently, I've been questioning, like, man, I've been, some of my life experience doesn't add up with anybody else's. Like, things I did not.
You got a touch of the.
What's that?
You got a touch of the tism. You got a touch of the tism.
And I think it's not. I think it's a good thing. Like, I'm actually very happy that I do. It's like things that I didn't realize could be, you know, a touch of the tism, for the lack of a better word. like for example, I did not realize that not everybody, you know, has this existential dialogue since they're like 2 or 3. Like since I was like 3 or 4, I've been thinking about like, why am I alive? What does it mean to be alive? Like, I'm seeing this stuff. Is it just a projection to my brain or whatever? I mean, it comes with this random like existential crisis every now and then, but it's, you know, get insight into life. And like, another thing that the tism brings to you is like pattern recognition. And I would bet my money that more people than not in our genre have a drop of tism, because to like, you know, hear polyrhythms easily, or like,
or to obsess about it. It's like, oh my gosh, that's 3, then 2, then 4, then 1, then 6. I need to listen to that over and over again.
Like nothing else
fits. Yeah.
I think you need to be a little, you know, spicy brain. That's the term that I've been using recently, because, you know, it's a lot nicer than just saying, you know, autism. Interesting stuff. I feel like music has been such a vehicle for me for like learning everything, you know, like
I just got this book. I'm gonna need to hop in a moment, but I did just get this book. I'll recommend it to you, even though I'm only 55 pages into it. It's like, it's a pretty short book. It's like 350 pages. It's called The Jazz of Physics. And it's this guy, Stephen Stefan something something. I don't know. The Jazz of Physics. Let me see. The Jazz and the Drum Tech of Car Bomb, this guy, Sir, I've been getting friendly with on Instagram. He recently remixed one of my posts. He put drums to it, and it sounded so sick.
That's cool.
He recommended this book to me, and it's been my homework to read it and then get back to him with my thoughts. The Jazz of Physics by Stefan Alexander. So he's a physicist and a jazz musician, like I think doctorate level physicist, and I don't know what he's done in jazz, but from the 55 pages I've read so far, he really knows his stuff. The book is just talks about, it's supposed to get to more meatier pieces of how music and physics come together. I'm not there yet. There's still a lot of background, even up to 55 pages, but I'm hoping that in reading this, that I get some kind of revelation, like, oh, like I need to explore that.
Right. Yeah. I'll check it out. It looks interesting. Yeah, I mean, speaking of Car Bomb, that band is insane, man. Like, I can only imagine what
the band is so sick.
Looks like for that band. Like, do you need to have like a PhD in math to be the drum tech? Like, what's the...
The drum tech?
Yeah, this is like one of the job descriptions where it's like 8 years of experience with calculus, 10 years of experience with blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check out the book. That's cool.
Man, I would love to keep on talking. I do need to hop, but this is a real pleasure talking to you, Cheyenne. And we can definitely, you know, chat again whenever you want. Talk more about the software stuff. We could talk more about theory stuff. We could, what, you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I would love songwriting, music, composition, whatever comes to mind.
I'm talking to you guys, and I love that we ended on TISM. That's a great.
Yeah, we coined a new catchphrase.
That is not a new catchphrase. Get out of here.
You don't think you can see people walking around with shirts that say "Touch of the TISM"?
I hear people say that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I also work with autistic people, so that's.
Oh, that's true. Oh, interesting. So that it's already a thing. All right. So maybe I don't have rights over it.
Yeah. No one's gonna say the touch of the TISM came from Nick Lurie.
From the Nick Lurie podcast. You know,
that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a Wikipedia page for you later, and it's just that, just like.
No, let's not. Let's. I've got kids. I don't need to be canceled.
No, it's all positive, bro. It's all bringing shedding light on.
Yeah.
On that.
Well, we can also add, like, he also has kids at the end.
But he has kids, so go nuts on him.
Family man.
Cheyenne, right?
Yes, you're saying that perfectly.
Cheyenne, yeah. Total pleasure meeting you. I hope to catch you again sometime. I want to see your new songs get a zillion views on YouTube and a zillion plays on Spotify. I'm a fan, so I'll see you soon.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you guys. I had a great time.
All right, we'll catch you later.
Bye.